You are listening to engaging and exciting conversation on the Radiant Culture Podcast.
Get ready.
Now. What's up, everybody? This is the Radiant Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Cookie Monster. And we're back for yet another hot episode. And today, today is a special day. Like every other day. But today, every episode is special. Yeah, just because we do special things, right?
But this one's extra special.
Extra special. Yeah. We've got a dreadlocked dude in the studio. So it is extra special. Yeah, no, don't worry. There's no smoke or anything. But we've got green tea, man. This guy is drinking green tea. I'm having coffee, but it's all good. It's all good. We've got Terry in the house. Terry, how's it going, man?
No, it's going very well, man. Super excited to be with you guys. Big fan. And finally got my chance to finally.
We've been trying to make this happen for a long time.
Very long time, man.
Yeah, and we finally managed to get our paths to collide and for this to happen.
So finally I'll give my testimony in church, man. I did it. I finally got there, man. I finally got there. Oh, Father.
finally got there. The Lord works in mysterious ways.
Oh, yes, He does.
Yeah, so Terrence Mgova is somebody that I think everybody needs to know. Yeah. He's a good friend of ours. Of course, we've got Mr. Kent in the house. Mr. Kent, what's happening?
I'm good, man.
You've been doing some important things this week.
Yes.
We're just seeing you in the socials.
This is also important.
So. No, this is very important. This is extremely important. So you've been doing other important things.
Speaking on platforms.
And
now sitting with the dreadlock guy.
Who's drinking tea.
Drinking tea.
Yeah, so a bit of history actually is that Terrence, a good friend of ours.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Fun fact. Uh-huh. Yeah. I went to primary school with Terrence.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Well, I met Terrence when we were running.
But just to set the record straight, that was like my third or fourth primary school.
You know? Oh, wow. So you were like...
I was hopping, yeah. I was, in case you're wondering, I was super slow, you know. So parents were trying to get me to...
No way.
But I was really? Bad, bro. I was bad.
No way.
I'm telling you, bro.
And then you went on to graduate with the cum laude and all these things.
Yeah, what a testimony.
Yeah, it's a testimony. Like, it was bad, yeah. But, you know, kind of happens when you start doing extra lessons at grade six. It kind of helps, you know. Kind of helps to get you right.
Anyway, we're gonna get into Terry's story because it's actually quite a phenomenal story. But, yeah, I met Terry many years ago when Keith and I were running a business. Yeah, and we were... At the time, we then met because we were running. Wait, how did this happen? It was the airtime business, right?
Yes.
Yes, yes. The airtime / microfinance business.
Yes.
Okay. Correct. Correct. That's how I met you.
Yes.
And a lot of interesting things happened there. But that was cool. The streets.
The streets.
And it was called T-Streets.
T-Streets.
Oh, yeah.
I used to put tea on the streets just in case you're wondering. Literally sold tea on the streets.
Oh, man. I can't forget those days. But I think, you know, that just gave birth to a friendship that's lasted all these years, you know.
You guys were in the same cell group as well.
And then, quite the loudest. But you guys know that we met in another place as well. You guys were performing at Spirit Fest in Grahamstown.
In Grahamstown.
I was in university.
Oh, snap.
You guys did Spirit Fest.
That was before the business.
Yeah.
Talk
time.
And I remember, man, I was like, when I saw you guys, I think I actually followed. I was like a fan. I don't even call it a groupie, but like I followed these guys. Like these
and
guys
just, and you're still a fan. Out. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Yeah, lawyer. Short hair. From short hair days.
From short hair days. And sagging pants.
There we go.
Oh, man.
Yeah, man. You guys were amazing.
Grahamstown. That is so crazy, man.
And Terry was part of a dance crew, eh?
Oh, yeah. Hey, kid still remembers, eh?
You know, what I love about, I guess, the people that are represented in this room is, I think the mindset that we've managed to develop over the years, the work that's been done, the passion for God, passion for community, passion to see people's lives changed.
Yeah.
And I think just the way God has shaped our journeys and is still doing so in different ways. So I want Terry to share a bit about, Terry's involved in a lot of things, but I want him to share a bit about what he's doing. Maybe tell us about what you're doing currently, but also just give us a brief journey of, you know, where you've come from, what you've done, some of the work that you've been involved in, because you've done some pretty, crazy stuff.
No, so I think the best way to sort of sum up my story is I've discovered a way to take pain that I experience or pain that's experienced by my loved ones and turn them either into businesses or causes that people can rally behind, right? So I think the first sort of attempt to do that was when I almost got kicked out of school because we couldn't make the payment deadline, right? And escaping that painful incident because my dad just managed to get a loan and just forced me to go to school made me think, how could I change this? So I've got this thing where if I go through something terrible or someone goes through something terrible, I ask myself, is everyone going through this?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And when I find people who are not going through the pain we're going through and actually experiencing life at a higher level, I ask myself, what are they doing to get there? Mm-hmm. And can I come up with the steps and processes to get that going?
Yeah.
So it was the first business, Educate, right? I almost got kicked because we couldn't make the payment date. So what if I came up with a company that gave people payment plans and negotiated better payment dates for them?
Right.
So that was number one. But what
And Educate is still running.
And Educate, 11 years in, bro. Yeah, and we're still in.
Amazing stuff,
man. We're still in it. And the second bit was when I was in class, I realized that I had gotten to university not because I had a clue of what I was going to do. I was first generation O-level to pass my O-level in my family.
No
so
way.
I was the first one to go to A-level. And I was the first one to go to university. And in all these steps, I was shocked. I was as shocked as my aunt. One of my aunts even called and said, you are a dummy, bro. What's happening? And I was like, I know. I'm trying to figure it out myself as well. So A-level, I just did subjects that I thought I liked.
Yeah.
But if you would have told me what career are you going to do, I had no clue, right?
Sorry, Terry. I can't imagine somebody putting your name and the word dummy in the same sentence. You're like literally one of the smartest people I know. I want to, because you mentioned earlier that you were slow and you had to.
So I think what I learned is that maybe it could be a fact that I was slow because of the way I was taught.
Okay.
Ah.
Right. And the way the system taught folks.
Cool. Yeah.
So you find that the education system often is more interested in getting a curriculum done and through than in identifying how different people learn so that they can grow based on the best way they learn.
Correct.
So I was not good in the classroom setting where the teacher was kept going, right, and assuming. Mm-hmm. So I struggled in that format. But when I got to do extra lessons and I got to ask questions, I think my power came from my ability to ask questions. And see the pattern in things.
Yeah.
So when I started doing extra lessons and started seeing patterns, I was able to even pass stuff like grade 7. And the moment, why are you laughing? So when I got to Form 1, I was sent to this really, academic school.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I found myself at the bottom of the barrel.
Right.
But this time I had a bit of arsenal knowing that, look, if I can ask folks, and I think when I got closer to O-level, that's when I realized that, man, if I'm going to pass this thing, I'm going to need help.
Mm-hmm.
And classroom help isn't going to do it. So I started reaching out to A-level students or Form 5 students who were just coming back and weren't doing much. And I was like, can you help a brother out?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I started learning. I started realizing that the more I was able to learn from someone who's near my age or my age, stuff made sense.
Wow.
So I started, that's how I passed my O-level. That's how I, like there's a guy, shout out to Crispin Caridzo. Like I got an A in maths in A-level because that guy would say, come to my classroom when I'm studying this section of maths that covers the entire Form 5. So he taught me Form 5 math.
That's wild.
Wow. So when I got there, I was like this, bro. So immediately, so I think for me, I wasn't smart the way school's taught.
Mm-hmm.
But when you started giving me when you slowed it down, and I think for me, when I saw my mom cry tears of joy that I'd passed O-level, and I'd pranked her and said, you know what, I failed. And it's like, so what do you want to do? And I'm like, this is the part you're supposed to shout at me. Why are you being so understanding?
Right.
Then I show her the pass, and she starts crying. She calls the whole clan. Like, she was on the phone the whole night.
Wow.
Like, this, my son's done this, my son. And like, for a moment, like, when I realized that this is actually important to her, it changed. Like, school wasn't about passing anymore.
Right.
It was about, I want to see my mom cry tears of joy every single time. I can give her an opportunity to do so.
That's crazy, man.
So that's how I went through all of school, man. It was, I didn't care about being top student. It was just about that feeling that my mom would get, that she would feel like, man, you know what? I've done a good job. I couldn't get to this level, but look at this kid who's making me shine, making me look good in front of my peoples. So that's like, that was university, bro.
That's crazy. So how did we end up at Rhodes University and all
so,
of that?
So like I said, clueless as to where life was, what to do with my life. Mm-hmm. My aunt shows up at the school, my high school, which was in Narira Mission there, in case you think I'm from a private school.
You got Narira private school Mission, vibes, though.
Yeah, I worked out, man. I watched lots of movies, practiced the accent, and got it right, man.
It worked, so, it worked. Yeah, listen, man, it worked.
I'll tell you another story offline. All right. But my aunt shows up on campus at our school and says, dude, you're going to need to go to university after you're done with this. I'm like, why? I don't think I've got the smarts for university. Yeah. And so just fill in the form. And
so like, even then, you were still struggling
I still had that
with your self-perception and
like,
all of that.
It wasn't there, man. I was just like, at that point in time, I was like, I could be the guy who gets 0 points and everyone laughs at him at this school. So it wasn't there. But like her belief, like she comes through and makes me fill in. I'm like, but Manin, I don't know what degree to choose. And fortunately, I had a cousin who was in the same year as me. Mm. And she says, just copy Chris. And I just copied Chris. Literally, I didn't copy his name. I just copied what Chris wrote.
So what did you choose? What program did you choose?
So he had picked accounting. So I picked accounting. And then I was like, the other one he picked was like, I don't understand what this means. So I then picked up something that had business science in it.
Okay.
So, and then like a couple of months down the line, the school says, the university writes a letter. Back then they used to write letters. Mm-hmm. And they write a letter back and they said, you're in. Dude, that changed the game for me. I was like, there's a university that thinks I qualify.
Yeah.
A-level was not even, it wasn't even worth sweating over anymore. Because I was like, it's done.
That's crazy. You know?
So I think for me, that's when I was like, even when I got to university, I wanted, like with all these little moments where I've seen God sort of work his hand on and show what happens like when an opportunity is open to you where you may have thought it wasn't, it changes how, like it removes the difficulty in things because you now have a bigger vision.
Yeah.
So my bigger vision was now when I was in college, realizing that other folks were there because their parents had said, do this, do that, and they were not liking it. Mm-hmm. So immediately I took a liking to sort of helping people who are struggling with college. And there are these things called academic development programs. Mm-hmm. By the time I was second year, I was the head of the academic development program in my department.
Wow.
Because it was just, I was like passionate about helping folks catch up with the speed with which university was going. Because I'd seen some people who got academically excluded. And I'm thinking, yo, this is it was a lot of money.
Wow.
It was a lot of money, man, to go out in Rhodes.
Yeah.
I think at the time, I think it was like 70 million rand, 70 million Zim dollars, whatever that meant. But it was like about 70,000 rand thereabout. Yeah. So it was a lot of money. It was a lot of money, man.
Like, I have no concept.
And the kind
in
of
those days, the rand was quite
strong.
Yeah, like 1:8 or something.
Yeah, it was.
Back then, I remember.
So it was a decent amount of money. Decent amount. Like my dad sat me down and said, look, can you see how much money I've used on you? Better not waste my money.
Yeah.
So, you know, and fortunately, first year was easy because it was like a repeat of A-level. So I flew through it 100% in subjects like maths and all these things. So I was like straight A's. So second year, I was now helping folks out. And I started realizing, man, like so many of us don't know what makes us special.
Right.
And we do a lot of things because someone else told us.
Yeah.
And when you if what they told you isn't you, you're going to fail at something and you're going to look at yourself as a failure. But no, it's because you did something you were never supposed to be doing.
That's
crazy. So that's the business I really wanted to start.
That's crazy. Terry, so at what point in this whole journey did you come to faith?
Yo, good question, bro. Yo, I grew up Catholic.
Yeah.
So I was a church goer.
And you went to a Catholic school.
And I went to to be honest with you, my faith grew in Catholic, like when I went to a Catholic boarding school.
Okay.
Yeah. Because before that, I just went to church so that my dad would not beat me up. And I started going to church on Tuesday. So I would not have to go on Sunday and watch Samurai Pizza Cats. That's how deep my faith was. That's how deep my faith was. Almost non-existent.
Pizza Cats.
So I think being in a Catholic boarding school, my faith sort of rose. But I think I was just there, but not really there. I was like always a Christian type of vibe.
Yeah.
But not deep.
Yeah.
Not deep. Not reading the Bible. Just, you know, one of those where what my mom and them used to share with me, what the priest shared, is sort of what got me through. And I think the only time, if I'm being totally honest, where I really took my faith to the next level was after my mom passed away.
Okay.
Because I left the faith then.
Yeah.
And then I only came back. That's how I ended up coming to Celebration Church.
Right.
Because I made, you know Manu?
Yeah.
Like, so came back from college.
Is he still in Oz?
He's still in Oz. Doing amazing in Oz. Yeah. So I came back from college in South Africa. I was so determined to build something for myself at home. I didn't want to work in SA.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get a job, right? With 2 degrees, with distinction, I could not get an interview to save my life.
That's wild.
So I'm wondering what's going on. Then my mom passes away, right? 2010.
Yeah.
And I just lose my faith. I can't deny the existence of God.
Yeah.
Because he's shown me way too many times his hand in our lives. Yeah. But I'm so angry at him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, why would you take, of all the people you could take?
My mom.
Why her?
Yeah.
And it crushed me.
Yeah.
So I stopped. And then, man, I think it's called the power of broke.
Yeah.
The power of broke. Yeah. So me and Manu are looking at each other. Dude, where's the next buck going to come from?
Yeah.
And Manu says, there's this church that does this conference called Action Conference. Dude, if we hook up there, there are lots of people with money.
Yeah.
This conference will meet business people. We'll be sorted, Dada. By the time that conference is there, you know how Manu speaks. I don't think there's anyone who can persuade as good as Manu.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, let's do church. Let's definitely do church. So we get dressed, you know, head to Celebration Church.
Yeah.
It ain't Action, bruh.
Oh, snap.
It's Mother's Day weekend. And I had left the church because of Mother's Day. My mother had passed away.
Oh,
so we end there. You guys didn't do that funny thing where you close the doors so we can't leave when we realize what we've got ourselves into. So I stay for the worship, and then Pastor Bonnie goes on stage. And she, you know, celebrates those with mothers. I'm like, this is why we should not have come. Mm. And then from nowhere, she starts to speak to those of us who don't have mothers anymore. Dude, I just found myself at the altar.
Wow.
Pastor Taz prays for me. And I'm like, I'm God's child forever now. So that's when, if I was to ever say where I came to a faith that's unshakable, it was there.
That is crazy. Wow. Does Pastor Taz know this?
Yeah, I think I told him though.
Yeah.
But hopefully if he listens to this now, he'll know. Yeah.
Dude, that's crazy, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. So did you end up meeting people with money? Did you know?
Nah, no jobs came there. I was just saying tea on these streets.
Well, then you met us, so you know.
So you see, exactly. So yeah, no, definitely. But amazing relationships, man. And I think even future business partners. But like it happened when we were no longer looking for it. Mm. So when we moved from being transactional to relational, that's when stuff started coming. But I think in all these things, I worked a bit in investment banking, tested this idea of what do payment plans look like.
Yeah.
And I think we built probably the biggest payment plan program. I was running a portfolio of about $11 million, 2,000 kids on a payment plan. So from Peter House to Heritage, all those schools. Yeah. If you heard about the payment plan, it was three of us, a Greek guy, and a lawyer, Feroz,
he's
like one of the sharpest minds you'll ever get. And I was like the stats guy who did the and we built this portfolio, and it was shocking, man. Like I'd get calls from headmasters saying, dude, can you come and do what you have been doing at all these other schools? We'll even guarantee some of these facilities. So it was amazing to see that the pain that I had experienced and managed to overcome was actually a solution that worked. And it was working for kids in primary and high school, not even the university that I wanted to go to.
Yeah.
Then I took the leap to go to the university that had given me a chance, which is Rhodes.
Yeah.
So somewhere along the lines, I think I found myself. I didn't do what Chris, I ended up changing my degree and actually doing stuff that I felt I enjoyed and had no clue what career it would end up being. But I think through just God's leading and just help and just wanting to teach, because one of the things I realized, I love to teach and see people understand things that would have otherwise
you've got an amazing teaching gift, by the way.
Thank you.
Do. Yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think and I love that the assessments that have backed it up, like I've done multiple strengths assessments that have come back and said, and there's something about finding out what you're good at from a third party who has no interest in lying to you or being kind, because Zimbabweans, you guys are bad, ne? You guys will tell someone, it's beautiful, it's nice, we'll support you.
Meanwhile,
you know it's not beautiful.
Meanwhile,
you know you don't want to support it.
Yeah.
So I couldn't rely on what Zimbabwean folks were telling me. So like multiple assessments got me to a point. And like
are we that bad though?
Yeah, we're ridiculously bad at that. Yo, it's terrible. You should see us at funerals. I think I've only been to one funeral. where I was at this funeral, and then the priest comes, the lady goes, and she's like, "Ha! This girl who you are talking about, is this the same girl I'm burying? Because I don't think this is the girl. I don't know if there's a parent in this neighborhood who did not have a headache because of this girl here."
Right.
She's the only person in the numerous funerals I've been to,
yeah,
who actually told the truth.
Wow.
Otherwise, you're going to be in the worst of the worst. And we're like, "You are so kind."
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you take things and you know.
Yeah, I've been to funerals. You know the guy.
And you're like, nah. You're
hearing some of the things.
And you're like, yo.
Hold up. No, I think it's the thing we have with death. I don't know. We just have this, we idolize death almost.
Yeah.
You know, we put it on this pedestal.
Yeah.
But so Terry, okay. So I want to talk about some of the work that you've done.
Yeah.
I remember when you, so of course there's Educate, which is, so it's still headquartered in Blue Ohio. And amazing work that you've done there.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. And of course, you ran Feed the City.
Oh, yes.
I remember that because we were trying to set up an office in Blue Ohio at the time and whatever. But then you ran this thing. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, no, that was crazy, man. So like I said, it's always the pain I felt or the pain I see my loved ones feel.
Yeah.
Now, it all started with a trip to the States where I was invited to go and meet with other entrepreneurs. And one of the entrepreneurs I met was talking about hunger in America. And I was like, dude, that doesn't even make sense in my head.
It's like an oxymoron,
right? It doesn't make sense in my head. And I was like, so if this guy's talking about hunger here, what does hunger look like in my city?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I did some research and found articles. And I was like, but like, we can write reports. World Food Program does beautiful in terms of giving us the stats. But it's so hard to believe. So I was like, I want to find out what it really is like by actually engaging with people. So this guy, Nick Marino, gave me this idea of doing these events called where you bring people together and you prepare meals and you then deliver those meals. They deliver them to particular soup kitchens or food pantries that then distribute them to places of need.
Yeah.
We didn't have that. We didn't know about that infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
if that infrastructure existed in Blue Ohio. So I said, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to prepare meals, come together, and then we're going to go around the city finding out what hunger looks like and use a plate to start a conversation on a much deeper issue, which is what does poverty look like in our cities, and what are some of the things we can actually start doing practically. I didn't want to assume I knew it all.
Yeah.
So, dude, it was crazy. Like, the first one we did, I was like, we want to do 2,000 meals. I think, you know, when you come back off a plane and you jet lagged, you're just hyped up from what you've heard. You don't think about what you're saying. And a day before, my wife's mom looks and says, "Terry, you do realize how much it costs to deliver 2,000 meals. That's like 10 weddings."
Right.
Like, you're right.
That puts it into context, right?
I did not know this, right?
Yeah.
But one of the things I'd done was I'd started this comp. When I came back, I saw a friend of mine, Elliot Mandaza, who leads Jabula New Life Covenant Church.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, dude, this is what's on my heart.
Pastor E.
Pastor E, exactly.
Yeah.
And he's like, cool, let's take a walk. And I'm like, okay. And we literally took a walk. And we walked from one restaurant to the next, telling them about the idea.
Yeah.
And all of them were like, sounds good. I'll support it. And one lady's like, I can put up flyers for you. I can do collections of blankets. She took it to a whole new level.
Right.
But what she did, which was exceptional, was she then called this organization called United Refineries and told them the idea I had. And then she calls me 2 days later and says, they want you to come and meet them and talk about what you want to do. So I go there, prepare my English bundles.
Yep.
You know, got everything set up. I'm sitting there. And I'm like, you've got everything. Like, you want to, I've thought about how it benefits the business, how it benefits the community, why the conversation is necessary. And Shireen just rocks up and says, so what do you need from us? We're in.
So no pitch needed.
No pitch.
Wow.
Has anyone ever said yes to you? And you're like, but wait, I want to say something. That's how I felt. But she's like, no, we're good. So do you need it as money or do you need it as product?
Yeah,
crazy,
right?
Wow.
And now you're having to think.
I'm like, both will do. So they say we're in. Now we got the momentum of like, okay, we've got a big business that said they're in.
Yeah.
So we go, we talk, we celebrate on Facebook. We say, look, we've got these guys in. Another guy goes. I think they called Quality Gas. I hope I get the right name. And they, I think it's Pedzi and his wife.
Right.
They get in touch with Pastor Ian. They're like, dude, we're in as well. We'll supply the gas that's needed to cook the meals. Oh, yeah, plus we'll throw in a $2,000. The moment the dude throws $2,000, it ain't a game now, baby. I was like,
the game's changed.
His game's changed.
Yeah.
Now we're buying stuff. I go to the place where I'm buying. So we say, we wanted to test out two versions, the sandwich version and the cooked meal version.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're like, sandwich, this feels American. But let's test it out. Maybe people will bite. But we were like, what would it look like to actually have like a meal? Like you have the nice rice, with like your mince. And so I go to this mince supplier. And I talked to like this guy, his name just disappeared, Guzin.
Yeah.
And I talked to this guy, Guzin, and he's like, you know, dude, I like you. Okay. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? He's like, you can buy some, but I'm going to give you more for free.
Wow.
And he says, how often do you want to do this? And like, I was like, I want to do this every single month. It's like, every single month, I'm going to give you 100 kgs of mints.
Wow.
To do this.
Wow.
And I'm like, yo. So now, the headache we have is, I got all the stuff. Who's going to cook it? Right? Who's going to cook it? And a friend of mine who does catering is like, dude, you can come to my house. But I need people who can come and help because the amount of meals I need to prepare is hectic.
Yeah.
So you got the gas. I've got like these gas stoves and all these things. You can come to my house. And then another caterer says, some people can come to my shop in town.
Mm.
So we've got Rev Chichi's opening up her store in town and saying we can cook. Some people, for those who can make their way to town, they can cook there. And we've got Esther on the other side of town saying, I'm in.
Yeah.
And then I post something on Facebook and on and guys, people start saying, yeah, we're in. Before you know it, we got like tons of volunteers who are coming to cook over there. And each one like, how's it? And like, dude, we delivered 1,300 meals on our first event.
Wow.
Whoa.
And then I got crazy. I was like, what would it look like if we do the feeding of the 4,000? Modern day Jesus,
look
baby.
At you, man.
And then we went from 4,000, we're doing 5,000. Before we knew it, we were on like 100,000 meals.
What?
What?
Yeah, it gets better. Wait, it gets better. So we even got to a point where we started going around the country, went to Mutare, did some stuff with April and the Mutare Church.
Yeah.
Went to Benga, Plumtree, Bidebridge. Just now we were doing food hampers during COVID. Mm. So cumulatively, we did over 1 million meals over a 2 to 3 year period.
Dude.
Right?
What?
That's crazy, man.
Wild.
And the weirdest thing is like, and it wasn't like, and it didn't have an owner. Like they, in the early stages, no one knew who was behind it. So newspapers would come and they'd interview random people.
Random people.
Because I didn't care to be known. I didn't want to be known. Like I was like, someone would come, there's a reporter who wants to talk about this. I'm like, cool, you've been doing it. Tell them what you think.
Yeah.
So like it was, and you'd get different types of people from different walks of life, and everyone would be like, I think we need to take the meals there. I'm like, do you know how to get there? Okay, cool. Let's get a car. We're going to take it there. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous, man. Even URL did a documentary of the feeding, of what it looked like a Feed the City event.
Yeah.
And how they went around the city and they ended up paying the bill for an old people's home. Wow. For an entire year. They were days away from being cut off. So it was crazy how when we gave people a platform to exercise their kindness, they would show up in ways where, like, I would be asking myself, you know, you only think business-wise a little bit later, and you're like, wait, how's this sustainable? But it kept going, bro. The only thing that stopped our momentum was COVID, where we couldn't meet.
Right.
But, like, it's taken so many different forms. Like, it's given birth to scholarship programs that we manage now. It's given birth to setting up soup kitchens in neighborhoods, right? And just a different sense, like the number of places I've been from doing that and just sort of seeing things. And now even our experience is stuff that we consult and help people who are thinking of doing something in that level. But my favorite story now, like the most recent one, was one of the organizations that joined us early on. They're a nonprofit. They came back to us and they're like, dude, do you realize that you setting up Feed the City set us up to know how to do urban feeding programs?
Wow.
So they now run one of the biggest school feeding programs in the country.
And it was like, burst out of
and it was
Feed the City.
Off the confidence they got
that's
from showing up to volunteer at these kinds of events. And then they even came back, another division of theirs came back and like, oh yeah, we used to attend pitch nights. They started doing pitching events for local communities, so like communities in Kai, Bubi, Wange, and you know, like they, you know, they're trying to set up their businesses, and they're saying, look, let's get you guys to pitch your business.
Yeah.
And when you pitch your business, you're pitching it to people in the diaspora, you're pitching it to people in and people would then say, oh yeah, I'll fund this, I'll fund that. And it was so fun because one of the partnerships we started getting is we got this really, because of the stuff we're doing, Feed the City, got to meet so many people. And I met this guy called Lance Edwards. Mm-hmm. This guy is ridiculously innovative. I think he may not go on record for what he's done, but this guy really helped in the fight against COVID.
Right.
And he's doing, him and his wife are doing amazing in terms of just helping people with diabetic wounds. There's this solution that they create that they manage, they now produce for like a dollar to anything from $1 to $3 a liter, which you'd normally have been buying for $1,000 if you're buying it outside. And they just, like this guy just created it and found or reverse engineered a water purification machine. So that relationship allowed us to start coming up with innovative solutions for people in the rural communities that lower deforestation. So last year we invested in two, they're called Tsotso stoves, but like Tsotso ovens for this lady who was doing cakes, buns, and all these things. So she wanted to grow her hustle in that area.
Yeah.
But you know, you're in Kai where there is no electricity supply.
Right.
So, and that kind of business requires some sort of energy.
Yeah.
So instead of using, you know, the normal ovens that take a lot of time, she wanted to start supplying schools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we invested in these Tsotso ovens that he created that are highly heat efficient. So they're very hot, but they use twigs. So you're not cutting down trees.
Oh, like, okay.
Like Tsotso. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And we bought two for this lady. We delivered the one. This lady uses the one and she's like, dude, I have no, like, I don't have enough dough for this one oven.
That's wild.
And with just that one oven, she got a contract with a school. Her neighborhood school was like, dude, you can now supply buns for the whole school.
Wow.
So can you imagine the economic impact that has on her? And then that one machine, another nonprofit started using it to train other people on baking. So she's now not only making money from her core business, she's now renting this thing out to other NGOs who are training folks and those things. So it got to a point where the one was more than enough for her that we even pushed the other one to Wange. And now we've got that sort of helping communities there. And I think at one trade show, they had a list of over 60 people who wanted to buy one. Like we've got like a waiting list. Expression of
so are these locally made?
Locally made.
Okay.
Locally made. Everything's
are they
made.
Are they readily available?
Well, for order. You can order them. They're readily available. But like the guy Lance is a missionary.
Yeah.
So this guy's just innovative. It's not like he's doing it for business. He was like, oh yeah, I think this could help communities.
That's crazy, man. Right? Terry, tell me something. So I'm listening to you talk and I'm thinking just the amount of impact that you've been able to make through your different initiatives and the different things that you've started. Let's talk about social impact for a little while, right? You're a believer. What drives you? What is your motivator?
Yeah.
What gives you the energy to do all of these things? You don't, you know, we're living in an age where people are just selfish. Everybody's looking for their own glory. Everybody's looking at, you know, how can I make the most money that I can from this thing? How can I get the most glory, get the most clout out of it, right? We're living in a world full of clout chasers.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at you and thinking, dude, you've done all of these things that have impacted people. You've got, but you've chosen to remain faceless.
Yeah.
Right. But you're still doing all of this stuff. What drives you? What is the motivating factor there?
I think, you know, our environment really shapes us. So I grew up in a community where less than enough was common. Right? Like abundance was not the status quo, right? Yeah. So you kind of see that there's more, there's got to be more to life than just me getting out. So like me getting out of the hood was not enough.
Right.
It's about how many more people can we turn, you know, can we turn their lives around? How can we get to a point where we hate poverty enough that it's not just enough for you to get out by yourself? You want no one to ever get into that space. And I think my mom really modeled community for us because we grew up in spaces where their siblings, my dad's siblings, everyone would stay together.
Right.
And I fell in love with being around people and sharing that community. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of carried me in every venture I do. Like it's not enough for me to just come to just build wealth or do well for myself. I'm saying to myself, what would it look like if all of us were that way? Like, what would it look like if the conversation about Africa is about how we are such an abundant nation, not what we miss? And I think as the deeper I've gotten into the word, the more I've began to realize that there's a plan, and a lot of us are missing that plan. Mm. And I think it's up to us to, and I've taken it upon myself to say, look, I love to teach. I love to see, I see the best in people. Like, I think it's worked to my advantage, worked to my disadvantage. So I've always asked myself, what would it look like if we brought out the best in someone? Mm. Because it's also like, because I've seen the model where you try and be the savior of everyone. You're the one who's doing very well. It's exhausting. It's like the donor model doesn't work. If I get exhausted. But what would it look like if I allowed someone to build their bank of beliefs?
Right.
That they could actually change their own situation.
Yeah.
That reduces the amount of pressure we put on ourselves so that everyone sort of starts to win. And like, and like I was talking to Keith, I think when you start reading the Bible slowly, bro, you start saying, yay. So I think for me, Genesis 1 is like, that's become the mantra.
Yeah.
Like when I look at it, I'm like, because there's a lot of stuff. I don't know if you've ever, have you ever felt that people expect success to be easy? Where did we get that belief system? I don't think there's a basis for that belief system.
Right.
But everyone says, no, it's hard. I can't do it. It's hard. But who told you it was ever supposed to be easy?
Yeah. Right.
So because we quickly, the moment it gets hard, we move away. Yeah. We stay consumers and never producers.
Wow. Yeah.
But the people who push, like if you look at everyone, the guys, even the guys who've come and colonized us, they had to do a hard thing of crossing oceans and seas and all these things.
Correct, exactly. Correct.
But for some reason, they didn't share that manuscript with us when they arrived. They looked, dude, this is not easy.
Yeah.
Right.
But they've built a system where they've made us into consumers and made us believe that we can't do anything except buy from someone else who's better than us. And allowed us to even get used to this race economics where a particular color equals success and achievement and intelligence. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But when you go back to the manuscript, you start realizing that let me ask you guys a question then. Like, what is the first thing that God tells us about himself? And it got really quiet, right? What do you guys think? Oh, when we're in church, when someone says God is, what usually comes?
Love.
Good, right? Yeah. God is love and God is omnipotent. You are good and all these things. Yeah. But it's not the first thing he says about himself. And there's this principle I came across called the law of first mention. And, I strongly suspect that's where the idea of first impressions mattering comes from.
Yeah.
And that's the whole idea. The law of first mention means, if I'm talking to you, the first thing that comes out of my mouth is the most important thing in that moment, because that's what, it's like my pitch that allows the conversation to keep going.
Right.
Or that's supposed to get your interest, right?
Yes.
So that says that the first thing, the ego, the first thing God says to us is the most important thing we need to know, because once we know that foundational truth, that's going to keep us interested in discovering other foundational truths that he needs, he's got in store for us.
Yeah.
So the first thing he says is probably one of the most important things he'll say. And when you go to Genesis, the first thing God says in the beginning, I created. So the first thing God wanted us to know about himself is that I am creative.
Yeah. Right.
Right? I am creative. That's the first thing. And I don't see too many spaces where that is spoken of as the first thing. Why does he tell us that? He tells us that because he's setting us up.
Yeah.
He's about to create us. And the first thing he says about it is let us create man in whose image? My image.
Mm-hmm.
So what about his image? Is man? What about God's image? Is he putting in man? His creativity.
Yeah.
So the first thing he wants each and every one of us to know is you are creative.
Yeah.
Right? And the first thing he then tells us to do as man is be fruitful. What does it mean to be a fruit?
Mm-hmm.
A fruit is a living organism whose seed is in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he's saying is, I've put an aspect of my creativity in you. And the only way a fruit is useful is when it's been eaten, when you expose the seed.
Yeah. Right.
So he's saying, dude, I need you to show up on this planet and start exposing what I put in you. Because when you do that, is going to cause you to increase. That's the multiply.
Yeah.
All right? It's going to cause you, and it says, be fruitful, multiply,
replenish.
What does replenish mean? Replenish means fill the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've discovered the creativity that I've put in you, I need you to increase you the utility of that creativity, and don't stop till the whole world knows you.
Wow.
Right? And just in case you think that it's, and at this point it's like, wait. I'm telling these guys this story, but I need to let them know that the moment you get into that zone,
mm-hmm.
trouble's coming.
Yeah.
Because the next thing he says is subdue it. Like everything is flowery. It's like be, do. And you have to subdue it. I'm like, kotaguru and I'm going, what's up with the violence? Right?
Right.
And what is one thing to say is that the moment you know who you are and begin to walk in what I called you to walk in, what's going to show up are the haters.
Wow.
They are going to come and want to disrupt you, because the moment you say, I am this, the moment you express your intention for change,
mm-hmm.
disruption is going to follow.
Right.
But when he says trample it down, what he's telling you is that whatever is coming your way is smaller than you. That's why you can trample it down. So he said, any issues you go through, no matter how big they are never going to be bigger than the power that I've given you. And only when you understand the power of trampling down, silencing the haters, going through the pain, is when you'll have your dominion. That's when you can have everything you want to have.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there, I'm like, ah.
That's
so this
crazy.
Whole time.
That's crazy.
When we are crying about it, when we say we can't be anything in life, because I grew up from poverty, I was abused as a child. That was the disruption that showed up first, because they knew, because whoever was in your surround realized that the intention and the mandate on your life was much bigger. So they wanted to stop you. And for as long as you keep confessing what happened to you, you are not going to be able to realize that you can subdue it and actually go forth and create what you're supposed to create.
Wow.
And even God did it for, and like, he was smart. He was like, when he talks about I created,
mm-hmm.
the next thing he says, and there was darkness and the earth was void
mm-hmm.
and without form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he even showed that when I stated my intention to create something, even for me, what showed up was chaos.
Right.
But my spirit hovered over the earth. And like, so he was saying, like, when this happens, I'm there. I'm literally writing this book out. All of us could have believed that if he just said, I created, no one, why does he tell us these 7 days?
Yeah.
Because he's saying, dude, I need you to understand these steps, because this is the process of creation and the process of success. So whenever you start creating stuff, you have to know it's going to take time.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be steps involved.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You're going to need to leverage stuff like segmentation, delegation.
Yeah.
You're going to need to use your mouth, right? And you're going to need to actually know who you are. There were so many things he wanted us to know.
Yeah.
So when I caught wind of that,
yeah,
I was like, this is my next business.
Right.
Because how many people are clear on the aspect of God's creativity that is in them? And if I can help folks discover this aspect of God's creativity in them, it's game over.
Yeah.
You can't stop my people from shining now.
Yeah.
So that's the business that we're in. Like, we started coming up, we started finding assessments that can pinpoint what you do better than 10,000 other people, that help us see the patterns in you
mm-hmm.
and how you have your unique angle of attack. So when we find your unique angle of attack, the next thing we say is, okay, now that we know what's exceptional about Kuda, how do we lead Kuda? How does Kuda lead himself? And how does Kuda allow the people around him to know how he looks at the world?
Yeah.
And just like that. Sorry. Just like that.
Yeah.
You can't stop people. Like, I think the moment people know who they are, like any transformation is always going to begin with awareness of who you are.
Terry, this is phenomenal, man. And I love everything you're saying right now. Because I think what's crazy when I look at our generation, or at least the times that we're living in.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of issues that people have. There's a lot of mental health issues. People are so, and it's almost as if we're living at a time where there's this flashlight that's being put on people's issues, right? There's a constant emphasis on the issues that people have, the problems that you have, the way that you grew up and how that messed you up, or this thing happened to you. And so now we've got a whole culture of people who almost glorify their issues and the things. So it's it, which gives birth to a victim mentality, yeah, because we all feel like we're victims. And of course, you know, in many ways we are, right? There's, yes, because so many terrible things have happened, yeah, to people. But I'm just saying, what I think is unprecedented about the time that we're living in is the degree to which,
oh, yeah,
that's being pushed. Yeah. And it's almost, you know, it's just this narrative that everybody has that my life sucks because this happened to me and, yes, what. And what you're saying there is that I think there's something in us that expects life to be easy.
And it wasn't there.
Right? That expects, mm-hmm, life to, things to just happen. And, yeah, we, and it's like, hey, where did you get the idea that for you to become a great business person, that is just going to happen? Or for you to set, yeah, up this thing? It's like we have this thing in our minds. And then the moment we face just a little bit of resistance,
yeah,
we lose it. You, yeah, know, we get depressed, or we get into some, we start spiraling.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's part of the lie of the enemy, right? That we, yeah, feel like, and I'm even thinking about what you're saying, because when God tells the children of Israel about the promised land,
yes,
God could have just simply said, hey, I'm giving you this land that's got milk and honey.
Yes.
You guys just walk into the land and take it because it's yours.
Yeah.
But there are giants in the land.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy that there are giants in the land?
Yeah.
And the everything about the land that God has promised seems like it's adverse to the,
yeah,
promise.
To the promise, yeah.
But God is like, yeah, they're giants, but you guys, that's your land.
True, man.
And I think
that's stopped a whole generation.
A whole generation couldn't go.
Because they just didn't want to face the giants.
The giants,
yeah.
You know,
they did testify that, yes, the land is flowing with milk and, yes, brought the fruit and whatever.
Yeah.
And then they said, but the sons of Anakim.
Oh, man, guys.
How wild is that? How many times are we like that? Where it's
exactly,
like, you know, there's this thing that you want to do. Maybe God has placed it on your heart.
Oh, man.
But
sure.
But the giants are there.
Yeah.
And God never said the giants would not be there. It's not, yeah, like God didn't mention the giants when he mentioned the promised land.
Yes.
But we see the giants, we're like, I can't.
Yeah.
You know? And then we break down and then we leave it. Yeah. And we feel sorry for ourselves. We have this, wow, self-pity. And I'm, yeah, thinking, man, but God is like,
yeah,
it's your land.
Yeah, you know, you got me thinking. You know the first temptation given to man?
Yeah.
This is what we're still battling with today.
Absolutely. Wow.
Because you know what happens?
Yeah.
If I can change your focus, I got you.
That's it.
And that's what the devil did, right, on Eve.
Yeah.
Like, let's read the Bible a bit slow,
mm-hmm,
and think about it. Like, in Genesis 2, God says, of everything you may freely eat. So that tells me there's more than one tree.
Mm-hmm.
So there are probably hundreds, if not hundreds of thousands of trees that are around.
Right.
For,
yeah.
Good,
right,
for food, right?
Right.
Just, yeah. Like, good for food, right?
Yeah.
And you guys can, and the only thing, so this is the thing with life, that God will always show you the abundance that's waiting for you.
Yeah.
But there's also a bit of lack that he'll also show you. Because, yeah, in the story of every tree tells us a story of abundance.
Yeah.
But it says, but only of one tree, of the tree. So, mm-hmm, which means the tree means,
yeah,
one.
One, yeah.
So it says, of this tree, you may not eat. Mm-hmm. So that was the scarcity put in the
yeah,
garden, right?
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting that the devil got Eve to take, he got Eve to take her focus off
the abundance,
everything else,
and onto,
wow,
the one thing that was missing, right? And isn't that what we do?
We do that so many times.
That, like, you got so many things working out, yeah, for you, but, uh-huh, you're like, yo, but I don't have those thinkers.
Yeah.
But I don't yet have this. I don't have $1 million yet. But you got good health and everything.
Yeah.
So the temptation to focus on lack is the one that's hitting us years later. And the lesson that God wants us to see is the moment you take your eyes off the abundance and start focusing on the lack, you miss the abundance.
Shucks.
So for those of us who are wanting to succeed in life, it's not that we don't have stuff that's the bad stuff happening in our lives. It's just that we choose to focus on the abundance. Because when you focus on the abundance, you miss what's missing.
Yeah.
I think that's the whole conversation, yeah, around gratitude,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That if you keep telling yourself on what's working for you, what tends to happen is you diminish the significance of what's not working for you. And in one of your focuses, if you focus on abundance, that creates momentum and progress.
Because,
mm-hmm, it creates the belief that, hey, if this could be working for me, this thing that's not,
yeah,
working,
yeah,
I can get it to work. It's, yeah, going to work for me,
yeah,
eventually,
yeah,
right? When we focus on lack, we are saying, even what I got, man, I don't even think it's worth anything. right?
Yeah.
So I think that's sort of where we've
been. And then you downplay everything.
You downplay it. And interesting enough, still in Genesis, uh-huh. God shows us the process. I think this is the process of success, which is be fruitful, mm-hmm. do, multiply, or probably, he didn't say it's multiply, but probably it's a doing word, and then do replenish. So in that instruction, God is saying, if you want to be successful, be, do, have. Be, that's the fruitful part, mm-hmm. that's identity. Do, that's the action part, that's mm-hmm. the fruitfulness, that's the multiplication, the replenish, the multiplication, and you also have to, you'd have to do the trampling down.
Yeah.
And only when you be, do, can you have.
Wow.
Are we together?
Right.
So you have to be who God wants you to be.
Yeah.
Right.
So that you can do only what God has enabled
you to do.
Uh-huh. And when you've done what God enables you to do, that's the only time where you can have the things that God wants you to have. So the desires we have are from God. But put those desires, because man is more interested in having, but
right.
God is more interested in you becoming.
Right. Mm.
So what creates the relationship between us is that God knows that if you become, you start doing, because your motivation is to have. Mm. The reason why a lot of us struggle in life, and mm-hmm. the reason why a lot of us get depressed in life, is because we flipped the success formula backwards.
Right.
How many people say, I wish I had, mm-hmm. or when I have money, mm-hmm. I can finally do this mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
And when I do this thing, then they'll know who I am.
But you should know who you are.
So you can have. Wow. But how many of us are constantly saying, I don't have this?
Oh, snap.
So when I say I was abused, what you're saying is, I don't have the life that other people who weren't abused have.
Yeah.
So I can't do what they are doing because I have been deprived of this thing. And only when...
And then that becomes your identity.
Becomes your identity. Wow. But when you look at life, how many celebrities or famous people who've... You know, when you look at their stories, being abused, became multi-billionaires. They did not let the disturbance, the disruption, affect the call on their life.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is that incident, that disturbance, actually becomes what builds credibility around them.
Yeah.
For me, almost getting kicked out of school allowed me to bring that credibility and that understanding, because I had felt that experience.
Yeah.
So I could bring it into product development and build portfolios that help hundreds of thousands of people, because mm-hmm. I can connect with those folks. So a lot of us don't realize that the pain we've gone through is actually a setup, because that's what makes us relatable.
That's so crazy, Terry. You know, we have to wrap it up just now, but you know, I'm just thinking as you're talking that this is such an important piece, right, in this conversation, because again, like I'm saying, we flip the equation, right?
Yeah,
because we're constantly driven by the negative, the things that we don't have. We keep focusing on that. And I think there's a sense in which we feel like, you know, one day when I meet God, you know, God is going to feel sorry for me, or God is going to be like, oh man, I understand my child. But then when we go to the and I think about this often, right? When we go to the parable of the talents,
yes,
God is not looking at the guy who had the one talent and saying, oh man, sorry, dude, I understand you just had one. No, God is you wicked servant.
Yeah, like he's not saying, you know, you had a bad upbringing, so I can understand.
You see what I'm trying to say? He's not saying, you were abused, you know, or you didn't have your parents growing up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, right? Of course, God is empathetic. God understands our situations. But God is still expecting us to be fruitful.
Yeah.
God is still expecting us to produce the things that we're supposed. So I think it's that thing now that should make us stop in our tracks and really sober up and say, flip, I need to do what I need to do, because God, you see, well, I need to work with what God has given me to produce.
That's good.
You know, and producing doesn't mean that we're all going to become multimillionaires necessarily, but producing means that we have to work in the tracks that God has given us to work in.
Yeah.
We have to produce where we are. We have to make an impact where we are.
True.
We have to develop the skills and the gifts that he's given us. We can't just bury them in the sand and say, okay, no, Keith had five and Keith has got all these talents. I just have one and I didn't grow up well and I didn't go to a good school, so I'm just going to bury mine and feel sorry for myself. God is like, you wicked servant.
It's like the words were harsh, man. Like that.
That's
harsh one, eh? But I think that also tells you how much God has put in you. because he would never ask of you something he hasn't given you the ability to do, right? Yeah. So that's where the wickedness comes in. He's saying, look, I do understand what you're going through. And I think when we read the Bible, there's so many stories that show us that he doesn't take those who have perfect lives. I don't know where the narrative of the perfect life comes from.
Yeah.
Like, think about being a king who misses his own inauguration. Yeah. Right? Not invited to his own inauguration. Yeah. But then goes, and like with all the things we mess up. So I think the lesson he's trying to tell us is that, look, the world I've put you in, and I think even when he creates the world, there's a point where he says he regretted creating this world because he was seeing, man, these cats be evil.
So messed up.
So when we see evil, it's like, this is what the world is like. This is like the very reason Christ came down, because man can do some mean things, but he wanted us, like, why would he allow his son to die? He's just wanting to show you that, look, the world I put you in is you'll have trouble in this world.
Yeah.
So like Jesus is even saying, if you're going to be successful, brace yourself. There's trouble.
In this world,
you're going to have trouble.
But I've put in you something that allows you to overcome this world, because you're on my squad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only time you lose is when you're not on my squad. But if you're joining my squad, that should let you know that there's nothing that can happen to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you can't get over.
Right.
And I think
something that hit me is, there are no champions without opposition.
Ooh, fire. How can you be a champion? How can you be the best, right?
When you haven't defeated anything.
So winning only is valuable if there's a possibility of losing.
Yeah.
So like there has to be the law of contrast has to exist.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine going through life, you wake up and everything's hunky-dory. You go to the shops, you get what you need, right? You go to work, everyone's high-fiving you. Yeah. You go to a client, they buy. Like, guys, it gets boring, though.
It gets boring, man.
It gets boring. Yeah. Like, we may not want to admit it, but that opposition, the possibility that someone could say no, even in marriage, man, if every woman you saw and said, will you marry me, said yes.
Yes.
How would you know you've got the right partner? Like, even if it's a... like, guys, there has to be the possibility that she'll say no.
No.
Right.
Right?
Right.
For it to make sense.
Right.
So it already shows us that if we're not bracing ourselves for opposition, how will we really know how much it's worth?
Mm. Oof. That's all good. That's so the deception of ease, right? The deception, that we feel like...
Oh, put that on the t-shirt. The deception of ease.
That we feel like things have to be easy.
Yeah.
But nothing is easy. Life is not easy. Nothing that is worthwhile is going to be easy. We have to put in. We have to put in some work. Anyway, guys, we have to wrap it up here.
Man.
Terry, just real quick, I want us to talk a bit about you. You said you've got a business. Is it a platform? Is it a thing that you've got? What exactly is that? And how can people get access to that? Yeah.
So what we've done is it's we've put it under Educate.
Okay.
For now, so we've got like you know, we in previous conversations we spoke about the work we're doing with money management, because I think another aspect is for us, we view money as a certificate of performance, and we look at wealth as both as a reward for serving other people, right? So a big thing about when someone gets to know who they are, right, and starts to do the things that they are called to do, is they are going to produce things that are going to be very valuable for other people. Yeah. So that it's going to attract a lot of certificates of performance, right? So what we've done is we've built like a toolkit. We call it the Patterns to Cash toolkit.
Okay.
So what folks, all the folks need to do is just let us know if they go on our LinkedIn. Look, I'm interested, right? You pay for it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on how deep you want to go. So everything from helping you identify to then coming up with how we lead you.
Yeah.
And then one of the things we've added recently is, how do we monetize your strengths? Mm. Because there's so many things, especially in the world we're in now. Like, we now in the era of digital assets.
Yeah.
So wealth has moved to things that are digital, that do not know borders. So you can now grow your wealth without the limitation of being in Zimbabwe. So if you were crying and saying Zimbabwe is tough, you don't need to be doing business just in Zimbabwe. And digital assets are allowing us to do that, right? And you don't need cheap to create. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that we've added, a report that allows you to see some of the digital assets you can begin to create that you are naturally built for. And what I love about the work we've been doing is that we've tested it on, man, I've been doing this. Like, one of the things I do is I seldom start talking about something until I've tested on at least 100 people.
Wow.
So we've done this on hundreds of people now. And the conversations were from one, if I was an apostle, people would probably think I see into their futures, because like, they were like, hey, if I was in Mfundo, they'd be like, hey, Papa sees. Because when you show people, like your patterns, like your strengths are your patterns, right?
Yeah.
Natural recurring patterns. Mm-hmm. So when I show you this, you're like, ah, that's why I used to do this. That's why I used to, like.
Right.
So it's really shown us that this is as close as we've gotten now to helping people discover that aspect of God's creativity in them. And we continue to develop it until, because one of the things we also want to do is we want to make the first step feel easy.
Right.
And if we can deposit significant belief in your bank of beliefs, the next part of acting is a lot easier. So we've created these into short little reports, assessments that sort of help you go through it and give you techniques on how to apply it. And, you know, we check in and find out from you how it's going. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, awesome. Yeah. I love it. And how do people access? So it's Educate.
So it's Educate. So they can email us at help@educate and just say, look.
.co.zw.
Definitely. Yeah. Or they can reach out to me on my LinkedIn. I'm very active in LinkedIn. So that's Terrence Mugoa.
Okay.
And yeah, just start the conversation there and our team will get things moving for you. Nice. Yeah.
Awesome. Nice. Lovely. Terry, thank you so much, man. It's been such a pleasure having you. I feel like we've just scratched the surface. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been it's a conversation that's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
So there's too much to unpack. But listen, next time you're in this neck of the woods.
Okay, let's do it again.
Yeah, we need to do it again.
Yeah, I've got a witness. I've got a female witness in the room, so I know she's gonna. You know, when there's a female, whatever is said gets done. Yeah, so
absolutely.
So I'll hold you to that word, right? You got me.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. Well, guys, it's been such a pleasure, such an honor having Terrence in the studio today. As you can see, he's fiery. He's full of life, full of ideas, full of passion for what he does. If you're wanting to have a conversation with Terrence about any of the stuff that he spoke about, you can catch him on his LinkedIn or on. Just look up educate.co.zw. That's their business that they're running. That's headquartered in Bulawayo. But yeah, I think these are the kinds of conversations that we need to be having. Maybe you're out there, you're thinking about social impact. Maybe you're thinking about, you know, what do I need to be doing? How do I unlock the gifts that God has given me? Maybe you're just, you know, in that space where you're feeling depressed, you're feeling dejected, you're feeling as if, you know, maybe you've been feeling sorry for yourself even. I really hope and pray that, you know, this conversation has sowed a seed and helped to start a different train of thought, you know, because that's where things begin. But you know, God is here, God is helping us. Let's be the people that God created us to be.
Yeah.
All right.
Amazing.
So from us here at Radiant Culture, it's been real, it's been good. Catch you on the next one.
All right.
Peace.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Radiant Culture Podcast. If you want to make a contribution, make a suggestion, or have a request, you can get in touch with us via email on radiant@thehub.co.zw or inbox us on Facebook and Twitter. Look out for the next episode and remember to share this one with everybody you know. God bless.
It's hot. It's fresh. It's uncut. #RealTalk on the Radiant Culture Podcast.